Proctor and Joe Uris host the Joe and Abe Talk Radio Show. At 9 on Alternative Radio, scholar and activist Tom Mayer speaks on Is the U.S. an Imperialist Nation? At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Stage and Studio, D-May Roberts features Profile Theater's production of The Blue Door by Tanya Barfield. We'll hear from director Bobby Bermilla and actor Seth Rue. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews artists Dana Lynn Lewis and Vanessa Renwick, who both have work and shows at the Portland Art Museum. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Good night, Rosalind.
Good night, Ken. Good night, Mike.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
The U.S. forced 120,000 Japanese Americans from their homes during World War II, all in the name of national security. Over 60 years later, a civil rights hero who fought this unjust policy is finally being recognized. Today is Minoru Yasui Day in Oregon, and in November 2015, he was posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. KBOO's Alan Montesillo interviewed two of Yasui's former colleagues to learn more about him.
My name is Peggy Nagai.
My name is Chisao Hata.
When we reopened his World War II case, I was his lead attorney doing that. And I co-founded the Minoru Yasui Tribute Committee with his daughter, Holly.
And I'm officially a dance specialist for Portland Public Schools. So that's my full-time, everyday job. And then I'm an artist, a performing artist, and an activist right in town.
I took the point on the nomination for the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Minoru Yasui is part of a group of people that came to Oregon very early on in the late 1800s, mid-1800s. And those Japanese that settled here settled in Hood River, Oregon. And they kind of liked Hood River because it reminded them of Japan and Mount Hood and Fujiyama, Mount Fuji. And so his family settled there, as did my family in Hood River.
He was the first Japanese-American lawyer in the state of Oregon. And when the military curfew came down in 1942, in March of 1942, he tried to find a test case so that somebody would violate it and he would represent that person to test constitutionality. And he couldn't find a test case, so he became his own test case. He walked the streets of Portland and got himself arrested so that he could go into the court system, the federal court system, and say that a military curfew imposed upon American citizens is unconstitutional. He then spent 9 months in solitary confinement in the Multnomah County Jail as his case went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. The court heard his case in 1943, and they found that he didn't abdicate his U.S. citizenship. He was still a citizen. And that the curfew was constitutional as to U.S. citizens based on military necessity.
So I had heard about Minoru Yasui through my work in redress and reparations during a period of time when we were educating ourselves, but also America, and bringing it up again that, you know, we needed to talk about the civil rights that were violated during World War II and the internment of Japanese Americans. And he, of course, was a very active spokesperson. It started out as a movement to bring the history of Japanese Americans and the internment up to the forefront, And I think it almost was a way for Sansei or third generation to help address the healing that needed to happen, not only for ourselves, but for our parents and our grandparents. So it didn't start out as a government thing. It mm-hmm. started out as a healing and an educational movement.
So in the early 80s, there were researchers that found evidence in the National Archives that said that the Office of Naval Intelligence, the FBI, President Roosevelt sent his own person to look at the Japanese-American community on the West Coast to see if there was a problem. And the government knew that all these reports said that it's not a problem. You don't have to incarcerate them. We've been spying on their community for many years, et cetera. And there was no act of espionage or sabotage on the part of Japanese Americans.
In my case, I didn't grow up hearing about camp. In fact, it was just the opposite. My parents never spoke about it. And the only time I heard Japanese was when they were actually speaking about it, but I couldn't understand.
My parents were incarcerated, as well as all of my relatives. And my father's family had bought a farm in Boring. So they had to leave their farm. They also had to try to get it leased, because if the mortgage wasn't being paid while they were incarcerated, it would be foreclosed upon. So my father's family came back. People had stolen things from them. The land was still there, but no one would sell him insurance. There were mass meetings in Gresham High School saying, don't let the Japs come back. His neighbors rallied against him. It was hard for them to sell their crops to anybody. So I grew up really poor, without indoor plumbing, eating government surplus food in the winter because they had to start all over again. It was a hard time for people like my father and mother, who were U.S. citizens, who were born in the U.S., who had never gone outside the U.S., to be treated so harshly by their own government, and then to have to come back and start all over again. My mother at the time of the war was 19. My father was 22. They weren't married yet, but they could only bring with them what they could carry.
My parents were married in camp. They weren't originally together, so they had to go through quite a bit to get in the same camp. They never talked about it, like I said. And so there was always a sense of denial of self. That's what I felt like. And I know it was not just me, but from that experience that was directly related to the World War II internment. Growing up in Des Moines, Iowa, I would not have been born there. I would have not grown up there had it not been for camp. My experience as a Sansei was directly related to what happened to my parents and their internment during World War II.
You knew him and worked with him. I want to know a bit more about what he was like.
Well, he had a very strong conviction, a strong constitution, and he was the ideal client at the same time. So I was a little apprehensive because he's my father's generation, I'm his daughter's generation, and I'm going to represent him. And he's a lawyer.
A lawyer representing a lawyer.
Yes, he was wonderful. He listened to everything that I said. He had his own mind, but he was very collaborative. And he said, I don't know if we're going to win, but we're going to give him hell, Peggy.
Well, I think what was inspiring about Min is he was very energetic and very clear in his thought and very articulate. So he was a spokesperson for civil rights, and he could really talk to people and help you understand what were the issues that were involved, from a legal, from a social, from a political point of view. And so he was not let me say what he was. He he really was inspiring. And I think that we really needed that voice then. We need that voice now. And we need to know that there were Japanese Americans, men and women, who were inspiring us.
I mean, think about it. He jeopardized his legal profession and his liberty to test the constitutionality. You have got to believe pretty strongly that your rights are going to be vindicated for you to do, for somebody to do that. And I've asked tons of lawyers, groups of lawyers, as late as, you know, 4 weeks ago, would you do this? Would you put your liberty and your profession on the line to test the constitutionality of a law? And one person out of 120 raised her hand, and that's been the average. So you can just imagine if lawyers aren't willing to believe the Constitution, but he did.
If I asked even teachers that I work with, who are your Japanese American heroes? Who are the Japanese Americans who has inspired you? They wouldn't have too many answers. And so that's why we want to make sure that Min Yasui, people like Minoru Yasui and Yuri Kochiyama and Grace Boggs and a lot of people who have led us.
You know, one of the reasons I went to law school was for justice and equity. So when I read and heard about the Supreme Court cases in con law class, it just made me so angry. But what could you do? The Supreme Court had ruled on these cases. Little did I realize 5 years out of law school that I would be given the opportunity to be the lead attorney to reopen the case. But I always felt very sad that Yasui had died before we actually could get the evidentiary hearing. So when we decided to go for a Presidential Medal of Freedom, and I said that I would be the point person to get the nomination in, it helps me complete these many decades of work on his case to have him receive a Medal of Freedom. And be the only Oregonian to have ever received a Presidential Medal of Freedom. It actually has helped me bring some closure to an important issue. And then, you know, recently we had a bill through the Oregon legislature, and that bill passed both the House and the Senate unanimously. So
March 28th.
Oregon is now going to have a permanent Minoru Yasui Day.
Yeah.
To me, having grown up in this state, it means a great deal to me.
It was going to Hiroshima, taking the play to Japan. And I think it really was like going back in a way to say, this is what happened to us since we left. You know, when we left Japan in the mid-1800s, late 1800s, we went to lots of places. We went to Latin America. We went to America. We went all over the globe. And here's one story. This is our American story. And for Japanese in Japan, and it was all translated, and, you know, there were many, many photos, it was, you know, they cried with us. They laughed with us. Some had not heard the story before. And it really was that sense of going home in a way and saying, you know, this is what happened and this is our story. I think for me, it's more than stories. It's our history. And it's the history told through stories. I mean, when we only have a paragraph in history books, when children and young people learn about the history of America, that it's more than that. We all gain from each other's history. But if we don't know it, like if I don't know part of the African-American history, or if I don't know the Latino history, if I don't know Native American stories and history, then I know less. It's been determined for me what I should know. And that is in the textbooks and the schools that I've gone to that are more traditionally American. We should all know each other's history because each of us had a role in building a strong America. But if we only think that there's one group that made the strong America, then it's not the whole truth.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the film screening of Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths on Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center in Portland. The film will be introduced by Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. There will also be a Q&A session after the film. Again, that's a screening of the film, Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths with Richard Gage, Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Labor Radio. KABU has offered a Bill of the Month membership since the very beginning of the station. Now you can be a sustaining member without any of the paperwork. We here at KABU Community Radio encourage everyone who donates to become a monthly donor. Our members that give to us monthly provide the most secure and stable funding for the station. It's easy and secure. You can set up your monthly donation through your checking account. We can also set up your membership with a debit or credit card. Monthly giving helps us cut down on the number of membership drive days we air annually. Also, monthly members are automatically entered into all of our sweepstakes drawings. Go to kabu.fm/give today to become a sustaining member online or call us at 503-231-8032. Thank you.
Good evening. Welcome to Labor Radio.